Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In Home Alone 3, the stakes are Alex, who's 8, has to protect a proprietary microchip from terrorists who would use it in a missile to evade radar detection. Presumably to be able to kill a lot of people without an anti-aircraft ammunition system being able to take it down. What the fuck?
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Worst Idea of All Time Emergency Season, which largely involves a global pandemic / quarantine, and myself and my esteemed associate Tim Batt enjoying the wares of a group of collaborators from the year 1997 who worked on an art project named Home Alone 3, a film or piece, I suppose you could say, that we have both just absorbed, consumed, inspected, admired for the second time. It's 2:39 p.m. on a weekday afternoon. Tim, how do you do?
Very cold, thank you, Guy. How about yourself?
Yeah, it is. It's not warm in the room I'm in either. I've had my little tootsies unsheathed all day. Not a sock to be seen, but I did tuck them under a sort of a shawl-style woolen blanket for a lot of the film. I've since taken them back out, and I'm noticing it. I'm feeling it. So I'm probably actually even going to put those back in right now.
Capital idea, Monty.
Where are you feeling it? What extremities are cold on your end?
I think the feet's a good place to start, even though I've been wearing shoes and socks all day. Still cold, though. Very strange. Not here to talk about the fucking weather, though. We're talking about the mixed media art project that is Home Alone 3, featuring the hit from Cartoon Boyfriend. Is it called My Town?
What else would it be called? This is my town. Watch your step if you come around. I don't think I know you. Well, maybe it's time to show you. This is my home. I'll be standing here all alone. And if you're ready to see hell, come on in and ring the bell.
Nice. Ring the Bell is what I would have called the song rather than My Town. That's what I looked up. So everybody listening, there is a pop punk song that's in the middle of the movie when little Alex Pruitt is setting his traps for, I think, round two of bringing the pain against the dastardly bandits.
It's round one. I mean, it's confusing because they actually like the song so much they do use it twice in the same way another movie might do with a very expensive song they've got the rights to, so they just absolutely slam it home. They commissioned My Town by Cartoon Boyfriend. This song only exists on the Home Alone 3 movie soundtrack. And
because I was looking for their debut and seemingly sole album, Nipples, and yeah. I couldn't see it on the track listing there.
Wow, dude, if you're a member of Cartoon Boyfriend and you're listening along right now, you might want to plug your ears because according to All Music reviewer Jason Anderson, their debut album, Nipples, is unfocused and banal. This debut release from Los Angeles rockers Cartoon Boyfriend reflects the group's diversity and eclectic influences perhaps a little too well. The artwork and titles present the group as a joke band, but in contrast with their campy packaging, many of the cuts on Nipples possess serious messages that conflict with Cartoon Boyfriend's overdone and sophomoric image, all of which leads to a sour listening experience.
Two-star review, that one.
Yeah,
It's like a three to me.
Well, the final sentence is, finding the right quantities of pop ingredients, however, proves to be a complicated task for the trio of Tommy Tillman, Holly Wright, and Boy. One of the band members' names is not unlike Beyonce or Madonna. It's just Boy, spelled B-O-I. Three semi-talented musicians whose lack of musical definition burdens the unstimulating nipples.
It's like the proto state of fuckboy is just B-O-I.
Absolutely.
Before we had the fuckboy, before we had the 2000s, we simply had Boy, member of Cartoon Boyfriend. And before we had the Gorillaz, we had the concept of a cartoon band. Or like, not the concept, the wandering idea that someone said aloud.
But they used the song once while he's laying the traps and once more after the success of the traps. So it sort of bookends that quite prolonged, booby trap sequence.
Yeah, it's called a montage, guy. Look it up.
No, the entirety of that is not a montage. That's a scene, you fucking egghead.
Him you would not be able to... That's a montage.
Yeah, but it doesn't bookend a montage. You don't hear the song scored over a montage, and then at the end of the montage, when the next scene boots up, they just start the same song again. That would be chaos.
This is a testament to how much I was paying attention. I did not realize that song played twice in the movie.
It's unmissable, because I heard it the first time. I was like, I remember this from our first screening, and it is just so of its time. I must know more. Yeah. And I looked it up, and then I was so excited to have the chance to sing along when it recurred for the second time. Speaking of music in the movie, Tim, I want to hark your mind back to an early phase of the film. It's after both of Alex's parents are seen on the phone, his mother talking to her boss, his father talking to his boss while preparing dinner, thus bolstering, you know, the idea that this is a feminist text as of its release here in 1997. And he's wearing this hilarious...
That when the iconic line is delivered by Alex's father? I couldn't tell you how good the product is on the phone. We have to meet.
I thought you'd have some ideas about that. Do you think this is a man who is in over his head?
Yeah, big time. I mean, even the most rudimentary salesman can attempt to talk up a product while on a tele conversation with someone. Begin the chat there.
Yourself into such a weak position if within a phone call in which you are essentially teasing the product that you are hoping to sell, you confess to the fact that a phone call simply is not enough, you know, face-to-face contact. I mean, you could sell anything over the phone. Like, there was an entire business. There was an entire sales model, phone sales. Yeah.
It still exists to this day. You wouldn't read about it because that's a different kind of absorbing of information, but... Telesales are still big.
Yeah, but at the end of the second phone call, we then see Alex walking up the stairs while scratching what he will soon discover to be the chicken pox, and they sort of plug in this absolutely insane instrumental, like generic Big Pond Garage Band sort of Getty Images style, you know, just... I'm going to play it for you now. It's just remarkable.
Are you picking that up?
Not really. And but you know, I think I get the gist.
It's like, it goes like this. It's difficult because I'm talking to you through a microphone that is not the microphone I'm recording the podcast into.
But it
goes
understand.
It's like it belongs on America's Funniest Home Videos or something. It seems so out of place. It screams much more of TV show than feature film to me. And I suppose...
There's a lot of very cheap tracks, cheap-sounding tracks used in this movie.
I suppose what it is, all of this conversation is opening up for me, is the idea that maybe, for how much I enjoyed the movie last time, I found less to occupy myself with this time. I found it to be harder.
Look who's come crawling back to old Correctimbo, as they call him.
No one says that.
Was this movie made as a direct-to-video film, do you know? Have you encountered that question on your travels?
I've not. I think no, if only because the budget was somewhere in the family of $30 million and it made back roughly $80 million.
Yeah. $30 million. You don't see any of that on screen, eh? Like, this is not a $30 million looking picture. You can make a fucking good-ass action movie for $30 million.
Yeah, it's true. It doesn't... But they kind of do. Again, they do explore two different genres of cinema early on. Eventually, they fuse the two. But you can see some of the money coming out in that Die Hard-style opening sequence, which sort of sets up the idea this is a serious crime caper. And then, obviously, we're transported back into the kid world of Alex.
Suburbia.
I felt like... The money comes out also in that booby trap sequence, which is really nicely teased. And I feel like the first time that this movie really says, hey, we're inside of the Home Alone franchise, is when it's we see Alex feeding his fish with a Rube Goldberg machine he's built in his room. He's feeding his goldfish Speedy. And there's that sort of old-style piano-driven jazz-sounding music beneath it.
Yes.
And that to me is like...
I even think... It's like an old Bobby Darin track or something that sounds like it would be one. And I feel like they use one that they actually used in the first Home Alone.
It does.
Home and Alone. Home Alone.
Home and Alone was the working title for the franchise, of course. They realized not long alone. After they could take out the conjunction. Yeah, that to me feels like when we're actually inside of the Home Alone universe. And it sort of does. It does somewhat go... downhill from there. Before we, I guess, get mired into criticisms or gripes or, you know, conspiracy theories associated with the film, Tim, I would love to know what your shining light was.
I don't have a fucking shining light. There's no shining light for this movie and I don't require one.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, I'll tell you what. I left my bread in San Francisco. That's my shining light. And I don't know if Mrs. Hess said that as a reference to the song, if you're going to San Francisco, but she says it in this whimsical way, and the movie puts like a highlighter over the top of the line of dialogue. And I'm just wondering, what joke did I not get? What reference went over my head? What's happening here?
It sounds like a song title, and the thing is, I believe it to be the same number of syllables as if you're going to San Francisco, because I wrote that line down, because it's like a Weird Al version of that song.
I left my... It doesn't even work.
I left it's my bread in San Francisco. It can work. It's also sort of bookended again. There are all sorts of little tie-ins in this movie. If you just look out for them at the end when Alice Ribbons is tying up Mrs. H or Mrs. Hess, the elderly, curmudgeonly neighbor, and says, I left my heart in San Francisco. But... I think that's a you know, you say you don't have a shining light, and yet here we are having a lot of fun with the idea of an elderly woman leaving a loaf of bread from a toy store slash bakery.
So confused by that. We need to drill into that. And what's it called again? It's got some weird
Parisian
name.
Or Parisian.
Yeah, Parisian, the famous toy store slash bakery. What kind of a fucking business venture? I mean, admittedly, the sourdough appears to be so good that Mrs. Hess went across country just to get a loaf of it, taking a big old plane ride to get to San Francisco just to get a loaf of sourdough. But, I mean, like, I guess there's something to it.
Dude,
parents love baked goods, kids love toys. We'll put them under one roof. We can slam the wallet twice.
Take pot shots all you want, but... We know from the airport scene when they are scouring the place to try and recover their lost toy car containing the important chip that Parisian is a very popular store. I mean, the number of bags from that franchise that they have to sift through and sort of very sneakily inspect tells me that at least in 1997, this was boon times for Parisian. I don't know that it's a real store. I've looked up Parisian General Store, and one of the top hits is A Guide to Paris Supermarkets and Food Shopping. So,
What we need to do is take a screenshot of the logo and then reverse Google image search it and see what comes up. And I don't mean to be an asshole, but is it pronounced Parisian, like the word? Because that's how I've always like heard other people say it, I think. But is that incorrect?
No, I this might be a word where both are correct. I really don't know. And it's one of those ones where I sort of liked the way that it felt to say Parisian. And so I just kept going, even though it might be totally wrong. I can't even imagine being told that it's wrong. That would change the way I enjoy saying the word. My shining light, Tim.
I'll back off.
Is when we get a weather report from Mark Mercuso, who is a weatherman for a local cable news network or some sort of news show, and he's forecasting a snowstorm for Chicago, which is going to have various different ramifications for the plot of the film. But he's doing it from a sitting position behind a desk, and it's so rare in this modern era of newscasts to see a weather person being given the same respect and treatment as your anchors. For too long now, we have expected all of the ancillary presenters on the news to do it from their feet. I mean, you know, the weather person is arguably working as hard, if not harder, than the others. They are doing a lot of their own research. I believe that the anchors traditionally just have an army of news bots who provide them with an auto cue to read. It was just a delight to see some of that hard work recognized and to see my boy Mark telling it how it is from behind a news desk and not even really getting up to walk us around the map physically, but just sort of vaguely gesturing at it and saying, yeah, it's going to be fucking snowing. It's Chicago in the winter. What do you expect?
Yeah, allow me to take a seat while I tell you, for this is the position in life I have earned. The only person you would expect to have on the 6 o'clock news with a college degree, like, you know, pretty sure thing, would be the weather person.
Absolutely.
Hopefully in meteorology.
Could I ask you, Tim, could you please rank for me or give me your power rankings on news presenters in studio? So from top to bottom.
Sports is the bottom. They are sleeping with the dogs and waking up with fleas because they are low down in the list. Now, is this how it should be or how it is?
This is how it should be.
That one is one and the same. Okay, how it should be. Well, I keep my sports presenter firmly at the bottom of the pile. I'm going to put, I don't know how many roles there are apart from the anchor and the weather presenter. Is there anyone else there?
No, there's not. It's only four people in the studio. There are two anchors.
I'm going to put the anchor in the middle and the weather presenter up top, giving me relevant information. Everything else you're telling me has happened and can have no effect on my life because you're reporting on events that are cast in iron. However, the weather presenter is giving me a statistical probability of how my day will go tomorrow, which will influence my actions. Why are we relegating this person to some sort of glorified model in front of a CGI map? You know, they're always treated with disdain. We get the morning television show where the person to fly out to parts unknown, getting up before anyone else in the morning to have to attend a library opening in a city with a population of 280 people. I mean, it's got nothing to do with the weather. Why? There's a trained meteorologist if you've got the right team. What are they doing at this ribbon ceremony? No place there.
I couldn't agree more. And you could also make an argument that news broadcasts understand the value and draw of the weather because they always tuck it away at the end. You know, you've spent a lot of time in radio production. You know the value of a tease. The entire news broadcast are going, and stick around, we've got weather coming up just around the corner. Mm. It's time for weather. Hey, don't go anywhere. You're going to find out about that weather. They're all stuffed away back there without any respect, you know. Well, they're meant to be on their pins for 55 minutes before they get to tell everyone what they're literally watching the broadcast for.
This reminds me of an old saying, which is you don't sell the... Wait, what is it? You don't sell the cow or else no one will buy the milk. You know, if they give away the weather at the start of the news broadcast, everyone's going to fuck off and tank your ratings. So the anchors know what they're up to, but I'm willing to bet that they unjustifiably get paid way more than weather presenters. And I think that's an atrocity. Maybe we should start a change.org.
Yeah, I guess that's because the theory would be that the impact on the personal lives of the anchors is greater because they're featured more prominently on the newscast, but it's kind of bullshit.
By that reckoning, we should be paying the subject of the news items a lot more money than anyone else, for they are the most impacted.
You're telling me that COVID-19 should be a very rich virus?
No, we are talking about human beings, and I can't believe you would open up such a booby trap for yourself. I'm not going to wander in, though, because you're not going to take me down with you, which is what I feel like will happen without a third party to officiate this conversation about your dastardly views on COVID.
I'm against it, and I will fucking keep
not
harping on
about
it.
People have been saying.
Until the cows come home. People aren't listening to the words I'm saying. Coming in.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
We need to consider the stakes of Home Alone 3 versus Home Alone's 1 and 2. Because I think this is subconsciously the thing that turned me off to this movie so much. And that hasn't changed, by the way. I fucking hated watching it today. It's a bad movie. Absolutely hate it. And the franchise, like, if you... I'll just say the first two movies, because apparently there's 5 of these in total now. The first two movies are good, and the rest is to be ignored.
Are they canon? Is this canon?
Well, yeah, it's canon, but like, what does that even mean in the Home Alone universe? Because it seems the movies just follow a kid who gets left home for
in your
some
eyes,
amount of time.
You're an outspoken cricket and critic of Home Alone 3.
I keep chirping on about it.
Yeah, that's right. To no one. Do you think that this belongs in the same conversation?
No, it doesn't. That's why we're having a whole other conversation just about Home Alone 3. But I'll bring Home Alone 1 and 2 into it, but it wouldn't work the other way. Home Alone 1 and 2, the stakes are that Kevin McAllister must outwit the wet bandits who are trying to break into suburban houses to steal some valuables. They're petty thieves. They're cat burglars of a sort, but they're pretty unskilled at it. And in Home Alone 3, the stakes are that Alex, who's 8, has to protect a proprietary microchip from terrorists who would use it in a missile to evade radar detection, presumably to be able to kill a lot of people without an anti-aircraft ammunition system being able to take it down. What the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, go big or go home, really, though. It's you got to respect the fact the franchise has left itself room to grow from the first two films, because you couldn't reverse the order. You couldn't have the second film being Macaulay Culkin dealing with, you know, a high-powered crime organization who are smuggling a missile cloaking computer chip, you know, on behalf of a different crime body. Like, we've got to remember that these four villains, they're middlemen.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you think that based on this trajectory, Home Alone 5 is basically like an Avengers movie?
I see, like, no.
Do you think it's Kevin McAllister versus Thanos?
That would be.
He's got to prevent Thanos from assembling the gauntlet with all the Infinity Stones and snapping half of existence oblivion.
Wouldn't you watch that, though? And also, I mean, why are Marvel sleeping on this? That's a crossover that would fucking rake in the cash, you know? Put all of the that would be, put all of so, the Avengers movies and both the first Home Alones into a bot, you know, a script generator, and just make whatever it spits out.
This is so relevant to what I've been doing the last couple of days, because I treated myself to a little computer game. I bought Injustice 2, which is a DC Universe, like, amalgam. It's really fucking cool, too. It's all, like, based on the storyline where in Injustice 1, Superman went ballistic because the Joker killed Lois Lane, who was pregnant with his child, and Superman started killing people, starting with the Joker. So then Batman had to lock him up. And so, like, Superman is a baddie now. It's fucking sick. But I bought the game while it was 70% off on Steam for, like, $8. Because you could play as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And this isn't a game with, like, Superman and Batman and fantastic. Wonder Woman swap thing. And I was like, this is the silliest shit. This is going to be so good. And then I fucking bought the game, downloaded the game, played the game. And to get the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a playable character or any kind of visible content in the game, I got to shell out $20 to buy the downloadable turtle content.
They got you by the short and curlies.
I am so livid because I specifically bought the game because I thought the concept of, like, Superman versus the Turtles is so silly, and I just so badly want to play that scenario out, but I'm not willing. I'm willing to pay $8 for it. I'm not willing to pay $28 for it.
You wait until 2 hours from now when your bloody eyeballs are rolling into the back of your heads and all you want to do is, you know, explore two different universes at once.
In this economy, I don't think so. They're dreaming.
Yeah, it's fair enough too. Should we drive the conversation back to Home Alone 3, a movie which you are on the record is not enjoying twice now, and one that I did enjoy once and enjoyed less the second time. That's not to say I didn't like it. It does feel much more formulaic once you know where it's all going. It's funny how that happens, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Watching it today, I was like, oh, like, they just hammer home the same story beats. Three times in a row at the beginning, they're like, he's at the house. No one believes that there are baddies in the neighborhood, but he knows. And then eventually it reaches a point where it's like just him versus the baddies. That is a very short story that they have stretched out to an hour and 40-something minutes. But I don't know. Within it, there's like, I think Mrs. Hess is doing quite a lot of hard work, the actor and the character. I felt like this sort of curmudgeonly older neighbor who it's insinuated pretty heavily is a big time retired daytime drinker and smoker. We see her fixing a Long Island iced tea for herself at about what seems to be 10:30 in the morning. She's smoking cigarettes in her own home, which I respect, you know.
She's fucking earned it. If she's reached the age of retirement, put your feet up, make yourself a fucking Dark and Stormy, whatever. Have at it.
She knows what she wants, she knows what she needs, and she's not afraid to ask for it, which means that in the eyes of the people around her, and certainly the neighborhood, she can be a bit of a weapon and a sort of someone who others are fearful of. But when you open her up, you know, she is sweet as a nut. By the end of the film, when it turns out Alex has been telling the truth and has done a fantastic job of capturing four highly trained criminals, Mrs. Hess is over and they're all sort of breaking bread and having a laugh, and he's freed her. Like, she was kidnapped in essence and strapped down to a chair, and he's responsible for her surviving. And so early on she coins the phrase, "I left my bread in San Francisco." Later on, they're all talking about the chicken pox as though the movie itself forgot that Alex had the chicken pox and that was an important vehicle for storytelling within it, so we better, you know, slap a conversation about it on at the end. And I say, "Have you had the chicken pox, Mrs. Hess?" And then she absolutely cuts everyone in the dining hall to ribbons by saying, "I had the chicken pox when Herbert Hoover was in the White House," which, I mean, even within the context, is not a very funny sentence, but fuck, I'll be damned.
It kills in the room, eh? Murders at the Pruitt household.
If it doesn't represent sort of, you know, a new direction for the relationship between Mrs. Hess and the Pruitts.
Do you get the sense that Mrs. Hess was going out to a date at one point in the movie as well? Because when she's very perturbed that she's got to stick around and watch young Alex because everyone's got jobs and needs to leave the house, she's like, "Oh, like, I don't have somewhere to go." Mm. So just, I don't know why, but I always read that as Mrs. Hess is trying to go catch dicks.
I can sort of see it. she's like really taking care of herself, and you know, there's no reason to think that anyone in this movie who is of age isn't, when they're not on screen, actively pursuing a fulfilling and well-rounded sex life. You know, it. Yeah, I didn't pick up on that, but I can see it. You know, maybe part of the reason that she's so relaxed at the tail end of the film is that somewhere between being tied up and catching up with the Pruitt family, she has been absolutely railed. Or maybe even herself, she's put on some sort of strap-on and just pegged the living shit out of someone else in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
that's the kind of shit that goes down behind closed suburban doors that no one talks about.
Absolutely. In these sort of upper middle class cul-de-sacs of the Chicagoan suburbs, you know, there's a reason that these streets are sort of hidden away from your main arteries, and that there's so much space between the houses, because, you know, I think we're all discovering at this point that noise is privacy. Like, you know, a lack of sound is what represents privacy. If you can hear what's happening in the room next door, in the house next door, in the house above you, that is a huge sacrifice of privacy. And these big sort of old Victorian Tudor style houses, while they might not be insulated or the windows might not be double glazed, so a few little peeps and murmurs are going to creep out into the outside world, people are doing all sorts of absolutely like gnarly shit.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to think that Mrs. Hess isn't one of those people.
I'd love to hear that. Speaking of, actually, while we're on sort of a sexual bent, do you get the sense based on this movie that John Hughes is an ass man? Because there is a lot of attention paid and jokes made with the focus of asses in this flick.
Interesting. I don't feel
like... You want
me
to run you through? I've got the evidence right here.
Yeah, please.
Scarlett Johansson's on the buttock region when they're asking about where Alex gets chicken pox. Knock off fucking dime store Buzz, the brother of his, saying scar butt at the top. The dad not wearing pants. The suction cap sticking to the woman's butt on the exercise video on the TV. Burton Jernigan. Am I saying that right?
Burton Jernigan. You've missed out.
Jernigan.
Thank you. You've missed
critical
out.
Critical syllable.
Probably the funniest syllable. Not in and of itself, yeah, but as an operating syllable in the bigger name. Can I also say, Burton Jernigan remains as a standalone name, the greatest comedy name in the history of cinema. But when there's a run on it together, when the FBI detective is saying who the criminals are, and at one point brackets Burton Jernigan and Alice Ribbons.
Yeah.
Double billing. That is a fantastic combo. Sorry, Tim, as you were.
It's like a porno that was made in Sweden, eh?
Burton Jernigan.
Those are the two leads.
And Alice Ribbons. Like, fuck me. What is it about those names? I cannot stop thinking about them. I walk around the house, you know, day after day, and just the echoes of Jernigan bouncing around my mind. I can't get the man out of me. Sorry, Tim, as you were.
He basically gets given arseless chaps because of the electric chair that he sits in. He's the guy with the piercing blue eyes who's super handsome, eh? Is that Burton Jernigan?
Yeah. He's the sort of, he presents as quite an intelligent and put together and buttoned down operative.
I looked him up and I think he was in Twin Peaks. He was in Twin Peaks something.
I love
that. I don't know if it was the series, the original series or what. He like looks so out of place in this movie because he's obviously an incredibly capable and super handsome actor. And you're like, you should be a bad guy in the real movies, you know, like in Die Hard, not in the Die Hard portion of Home Alone 3.
Mm. I just quickly want to say that those asses, while featured prominently, you know, and thank you very much for compiling such a comprehensive list, I think that they are a testament to the tone of the film, less than John Hughes being an ass man, so to speak. More of an ass humorist. Like, all of the butt stuff is joke-driven. It's less sexy. And, you know, I mean, it's not a sexy film, unless you look for it, like we appear to be willing to do in certain pockets and moments. It's not a sexy film. That's not to say that the people on camera lack sex appeal. It's just not the focus, or the, you know, it's not the modus operandi for Home Alone 3.
Who's the sexiest woman in this movie for you?
Oh, man, don't put me on the spot like that.
And yet,
If you think about it long enough, it's Mrs. Hess, but on the first two... at first blush, my answer would have to remain... what's her name again? Haviland Morris, Karen Pruitt, Alex's mum. There's something about her which I find very warm and welcoming. And as far as the men go, I mean, it's got to be Burton Jernigan. Funny name, but there's nothing funny about this guy's eyes. They are the piercing blue of a snow leopard. And when he looks at you, he looks through you and into your, like, sort of most guarded and guttural and deeply held desires. Would I like to see more screen time between Burton Jernigan and Mrs. Hess? You know, that's a question for another episode. But certainly, if there is a deleted scenes or bonus features part of this where we see the two of them just fucking railing each other, I wouldn't be upset.
Send that on through. Send that on through to the boys. You don't need to keep that to yourself. Yeah. You can share that one on with the boys.
Don't be a holdout. Give the boys what they need.
I think we should probably be working towards a round off now, but I got the most huge error on screen that I've ever seen in a movie, just in terms of a continuity fuck up. I wonder if you saw it as well. It involves a gun.
Is it the painting of the bubble gun?
Nah.
As orange and pink?
None of that. It's way more obvious.
Okay, what was it?
Way more obvious. Oh, yeah, that's bad. But this one is, like, insane. So at the start of the movie, when we're introduced to Alex Pruitt, the star, and we need to learn that he's a mischievous little boy with some tech nous, he, first of all, because, like, he picks up a handgun. I think this happens before we see the rifle. He picks up a handgun that's in, like, a gun case. And we're like, why the fuck does this 8-year-old have a handgun? And then he shoots it at the TV and the suction cap fires onto the screen. You're like, oh, okay. It's a toy, a very convincing looking
onto
toy.
Onto an ass.
The 90s.
No less.
Yeah, onto an ass. As is John Hughes' way. Then he pulls out a rifle. And when he pulls it, I think that one's out of a gun case as well. But either way, he wields it. And it looks like a black assault rifle. It's fucking terrifying. And then when he puts it to his eye, it transforms. And this is in the very next shot. It is a remote TV remote control strapped to a steel pipe.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about. I believe that to be a slug gun. And yeah, I've also spotted the continuity, but we are to believe that in the time between him picking up the initial rifle and using the scope for the remote control, that he has somehow removed the rifle and attached the scope to a remote. Like, I've noticed it, but forgiven it.
Oh, so because it's in the next shot, so that confused me. So what he's just looking at through the scope that was on the gun, and he's tied the remote to it.
Yeah. Because we
that's just bad editing, but that's not as bad as I thought it was.
We later do see him using the remote with the scope like multiple times. In fact, that is probably a good place to leave it and get excited for our next screening, Tim, because there was a lot of stuff I wrote down that we didn't get to today in the world of tech in Home Alone 3. There's a lot of really exciting stuff that they were using and stuff that I'd love to get your opinion on. So perhaps our next episode could be the tech special. We sort of explore the exciting world of gadgets.
100%. I would love that. I would love nothing more. As we round off this episode, I would like everyone to raise a glass, whatever you've got in front of you, to Mrs. Hess and her sexual exploits.
Absolutely.
May they be fulfilling and mutually enjoyable for all parties.
Absolutely. Pour some out don't pour some out. Put some in. For the fantastic Mrs. Hess. Because one thing we do all say is, oh, well, never have I ever seen an ass so better than magical Mrs. Hess's booty. Almost works. We'll see you next time. Go fuck yourselves. Wash your hands. That's what leaving is.
I've only done that. There's only one live show I can remember that I've done that to, and it was the Green Day musical. Oh, man.
I would have loved to have been that with you, Tim.
Dude, it was insane. It was wild.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.